You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by business and political expert Jay Amernick, political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, and me, journalist in all media, Heather Vail, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com. And welcome to the show on this Wednesday, August the 27th, a gorgeous day here in Las Vegas. I'm Heather Vail, and I am here with my co-hosts, Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Jay Amernick is a strategic planner who helps clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks. He's also the guy who serves as the bridge in Nevada for Israeli companies who want to expand their business here in the U.S. And he has a development lab that creates smartphone apps and other inventions. Rick Raddatz is a serial entrepreneur and an internet marketer who has a degree in philosophy. His political development that he has come up with is called The Solution, and that solution is to cap and prioritize government spending. I'm Heather Vail, interviewer and journalist in all media, sometimes known as The Unwrapper. Welcome to the show, guys. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good as well. I'm good as well. How has your week been here in Vegas, Jay?
It's been fantastic. I mean, the summer's winding down, and it's actually a little bit depressing. I have to say, this has been one of the best summers of my life. I am beyond tan rested.
The summer of Jay. It's the summer of Jay.
This was the summer of Jay. This was absolutely the summer of Jay. Yesterday, some friends of mine had a pass for Tao Beach at the Venetian, so we went there. And it was, you know, it was just a nice day. I went down and checked out the new SLS casino. That
used to be the Sahara.
Yeah. Not so impressed, but
no?
You know.
Okay.
No. Nah.
Well, at least it's more impressive than it was when it was just sitting there as the ruins of the Sahara for years. So.
Yes, that is true. So. Yeah. And other than that, I've been, you know, trying to take it easy.
Okay. So, how about you, Rick?
Nothing exciting.
Anything exciting in Colorado? Rick? Rick does not hear us. Or Rick is gone.
Apparently Rick does not hear us.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you see him? His image seems to be frozen. You know what? He spoke too soon because he said everything sounds good today. And I said, don't, you're going to jinx it. And sure enough, I mean, this is karma.
Sure.
Right,
it
he immediately
karma.
Gets dumped off both the hangout and the call. And, all right.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So, all right. So, well, yes. So the SLS, you know, it was what it was, you know. And then I'll just recap what we said on the hangout. So I don't know if everybody heard it on the show. Is that, you know, I always try to Rick and I sort of discuss and we try to guess, you know, prior to the show what the top story is going to be because we really don't know until you tell us. This week I really had no idea because I said I'd gone from watching the news to the History Channel to now watching, you know, Turner Classic Movies and literally from like what's happening to what happened to what I wish would happen. And that's the story of my life. And of course, it doesn't get as big a laugh the second time around. I believe Rick is back, but he's still frozen on the hangout.
Yeah. Well, it says he joined. Rick, do you hear us?
I can hear you.
Okay. Very good.
Okay. Now we can hear
Rick
you too.
Tells about Colorado.
So did you have to say how perfect everything sounded? I told you you were going to jinx it. You immediately got dumped off the call.
Well, it turns out my Comcast internet went out. Luckily, I also have DSL through my phone company as a backup. So I switched and now back online. There you go.
Okay, cool. All right, so we were just talking about what's happening in Las Vegas, what Jay's been doing this past week. So how are things in Colorado?
Good. I had my birthday this week. My wife baked me baked Alaska because I've been I've been asking her to bake that for me for 13 years, and she always thought it was a joke. And
really?
Finally, she actually did it. And it wasn't all that special, really. But 13 years from now, she'll bake a chocolate souffle is the plan.
Okay. Why did she think it was a joke?
Because a complicated thing. It's not actually all that flavorful. It's just cake and ice cream and some meringue. So it's like it's a complicated thing.
And you set it on fire.
Yeah, well, you can set it on fire. Yeah, you can do it that way too.
That's the baked part.
That's a flaming Alaska.
Yeah. No, it's the bacon. Well, you see, at first I was serious. I wanted bacon Alaska for my birthday, and then at some point it just became a joke. And so she'd ask me what I want for breakfast. I'd say bacon Alaska. So from that point on, she never took me seriously. But this year she actually did it, and we had candles and the whole thing, and it was my birthday. So there we go.
That's cool. Do you want to throw up your lower third so people watching the Hangout know who the heck you are?
I can try.
And while you're doing.
Don't do anything to upset the apple cart.
Yeah, as long as we're not going to lose you, sakes. Do that. Oh, he did it.
Okay, I have thrown up my lower third. Thank you for the visual.
Nice. Okay. All right. So while we're at it, while we're focused on you, why don't you tell us what the heck the solution is and what it means to cap and prioritize government spending?
Okay. So, you know, as you know, the left wants social justice or fairness, equal opportunity, whatever you want to call it. The right wants limited government, more freedom, lower taxes, and so on. And how do you unite all of these different goals across the political spectrum? The answer, based on 7 years of research, is cap and prioritize. And it's just like it sounds. Step one is to cap government spending just like the political right would like, while maintaining the purchasing power of spending. And then you block grants, all the social spending to the states, create 50 different experiments for how to best spend that money and how to best prioritize the spending of that money. And by constantly reprioritizing and reprioritizing the constant purchasing power, we're going to find better and better ways to use that money. We're going to actually improve social justice as we lower taxes, because the economy grows a little faster than purchasing power. So that's cap and prioritize. It unites the desire for the right to have limited government and lower taxes, and it unites the desire of the left to have social justice and fairness pursued by the government aggressively.
Okay, when you talk about these 7 years of research, what type of research were you actually doing, and at what point did you realize that this was actually the solution?
Sure. Well, the first 4 years was all flying around the country talking to people, people on the left, right, and center. And the big breakthrough actually came in about the middle of that, about 2 years into the effort. But it took another 2 years to really explore the process, and then I spent the last 3 years or so refining it more like a philosopher would, alone, thinking through all these different puzzles, and actually turning it into a true political philosophy. So we have the philosophy for the academics of the world to party on. We have the reform, cap and prioritize, for the public at large to think about, and I'm working on all of those fronts.
Okay, cool. So this is really weird because our Hangout says it's off air, even though it says it's like 99% ready to be on air. So I don't even know if this Hangout is going to be live.
Okay. Oh, but mine says off air too.
Yeah, it's hanging at 99.
And you've actually frozen on the picture.
Yeah, it says 99% at the bottom. So it made it 99% to getting us on the air. But at least we're on the radio, so at least we will have that, if nothing else.
Exactly.
And, you know, I don't know how to get past the 99, so just although that's a very political number to have up.
We are the 99%.
Yeah, we're the 99%.
OccupyPoliticalFixRadio.com.
Yeah.
Probably is. Probably anonymous.
We literally are the 99%.
All right, so do you guys want to hear the top story? Jay was trying to guess. I told him he'd never guess. And I'm kind of curious. I'm kind of curious to see what you guys are going to do.
The top story is that orange juice futures are down.
Really?
I saw that in Trading Places. It was a movie.
Yeah. That totally reminds me of Trading Places.
Because they were expecting a freeze in Florida. But it could happen.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway,
yeah, so
top story.
That's my prediction for the top story. Okay
so that was the top story 30 years ago in fiction.
Yeah.
Now let's go with the top story for today. In the aftermath of the police shooting in Ferguson, Missouri, some police departments are reaching out to black communities to build trust. They're holding public meetings, fielding questions, and basically letting people voice the anger that they feel towards officers who patrol their neighborhoods. Dallas Police Chief David Brown considers it a preventative step and a way to build relationships with the community. Dallas has had 13 police shootings so far this year, leading to 8 deaths. That follows last year's tally of 22 shootings and 6 deaths, according to the police. So to reassure the public, Dallas County District Attorney Craig Watkins recently announced that he would begin sending 2 prosecutors to independently investigate every police shooting. Both Brown and Wallace are black, and they both grew up in Dallas. Watkins says that he also mistrusted law enforcement as a young man, and he thinks that more needs to be done to restore public confidence in it, particularly among blacks and Latinos. Two Dallas officers were recently fired and indicted for separate shootings of civilians. So to address the issue, the department is running a pilot program for body cameras, and they're buying more tasers to give officers a less deadly option to subdue attackers. The fraught relationship between police and black residents was evident last week when a group of black protesters marched through South Dallas chanting the name of Michael Brown, who is the unarmed 18-year-old that was shot to death by a Ferguson officer. The group calls itself the Huey P. Newton Gun Club after one of the co-founders of the Black Panthers. About 30 people carried signs and long guns, which are permitted in most public places in Texas. Several protesters said that their concerns went beyond Ferguson. In Nashville, Police Chief Steve Anderson and several other law enforcement and political leaders were part of a meeting last week that drew several hundred people, most of them black, to a Baptist church. And in Kansas City, Missouri, police have also begun a series of community forums where residents can meet with officers. Less than 2 weeks after Brown was killed in Ferguson, St. Louis Police Chief Sam Dotson went to the scene where two officers shot and killed a knife-wielding man. The 25-year-old suspect, like Brown, was black. The city said in a statement that it would learn from this tragedy, and it outlined a range of actions that it's going to take in the future. So, Jay, what are your thoughts?
Overall, I think any time that the police can communicate with the public, it's a good thing. I'm not so quick to make this a racial issue, and I really hope it isn't. It may very well be. Like I said, overall, when they communicate with the public, it's a good thing.
Yeah, they seem to be outlining it as a racial issue.
Yeah.
Now, the stats do not tell us of those number of civilians that were shot and killed, how many were black or not black. But the implication here is that the majority of them, or all of them, were black.
Right. Well, I mean, we have to figure out those are just raw statistics. You have to look. I mean, if it happens in, an overwhelmingly black neighborhood,
there we are.
Correct?
Jay's back.
Okay, if it happens in an overwhelmingly black neighborhood, then obviously the majority of the people involved are going to be black. That's just the way, you know what I mean? So you can't just look at the overall raw data. You really have to drill down on what it actually means.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that.
So.
Wow, that's a lot of noise.
Yeah, it's getting funky today. Okay.
Yeah. All right, Rick, what are your thoughts? How are we going to cap and prioritize?
Well, cap and prioritize, of course, will fix social justice over time, but we're talking decades here, so that's not the quick fix. While the world is as messed up as it is, you need to respect that and take actions accordingly, even if in a more ideal world you wouldn't have to. So in this case, the more black police officers you can have in whatever force is patrolling predominantly black neighborhoods, that's probably a good thing, just because that right away takes race largely off the table, although it's always going to be there. And I like to point out that I think in this case, it's more about racism for the black people in that community, or many of the black people in that community, than it is for everyone else. That's often the way it is when racism is involved, is it may not be racist for us from our point of view, it is for them. And so it is still an issue, but that's why simple strategies like making sure that you have a lot of black police officers patrolling black areas is just a good thing to do.
The solutions that they're suggesting do include hiring more black officers, also raising money to buy dashboard and body cameras, and working more closely with schools to provide better resources for young people.
Yeah. The unfortunate truth is that the prosecution, in this case, I guess it depends on how you look at it, but essentially the victim here, and the people who support the victim, you know, they're free to talk to the press and say anything they want, whereas the police have their hands tied a little bit. They can't produce a lot of the evidence publicly. That's right. Otherwise, they taint the case. So, you know, this is a situation where, you know, more we can just calm things down and just wait for the wheels of justice to turn. We'll see what happens. It'll never be perfect, but there's a lot of facts left in the case here that we just don't know about yet.
So do you think that the community-based town hall meeting style is a good idea in that case?
Well, it depends how on edge the community is. Those can, you know, kind of turn into riots if the wrong thing is said, even by accident. So it's a dangerous thing. I think it's appropriate to use caution. You know, town hall meetings in other areas are more safer. You know, right there at ground zero, it might be a little tough, but you know, people on the ground are going to have to make that decision.
Yeah. Okay. And long term.
There's a little delay here. I was just going to say that one of the philosophical points that I've been studying in the last couple of years is the fact that since the real world is so complex, you got to give the good guys a little bit of a break, because the bad guys and the foolish people, the uninformed people, you know, they're not going to respect certain limits or you know, they're not going to be patient. They're going to rush to judgment and so on. So it's important to give the good guys a break. Now, who are the good guys here? Darn it, the good guys are the police in general. Okay, give the police a break and be patient and let the case go to court and so on. It's still investigated on both sides, absolutely, but let's not rush to judgment. Got to give the good guys a break.
Yeah, okay. So let's take a quick break here, and we'll come back in a few minutes and discuss kind of how capping and prioritizing can solve this type of thing long term. And we'll be right back with you in a few minutes on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Before the break, we were talking about the top story, which is some unrest in various communities in the U.S. due to police shootings. Primarily, it's the Black communities in those areas that are concerned, because it seems like a vast proportion of the civilians being killed are Black. So we were talking about their solutions short term, which include hiring more Black police officers, using more cameras, using tasers instead of guns. But Rick mentioned that long term, we can solve this with cap and prioritize. So I'd like to hear from you, Rick. How can that happen?
Sure. Well, you got to think about how much progress is made generation by generation when you fix really important things. Like in the topic of racism, you know, there's slavery, then there's a civil war, then there's you know, an effort to repair the South, and then there's civil rights, and now generation by generation, racism is less and less of an issue. For example, you know, 20, or actually about 40 years ago or so, back in the 60s and 70s, when there were race riots, you know, many times more people died, and much more destruction. And so, I mean, you know, the country was worse then in terms of race relations than it is now. It's not great. It's not perfect, but it's getting better. If we fix our financial situation in the U.S. where we truly cap government spending so it's sustainable, then that takes a lot of the pressure off the political right. They get to be a little more relaxed about politics. And if you also, within the cap, prioritize spending so that the results matter and the people who need help most get the help they, you know, from the programs that help them best, and we constantly improve those programs, then, you know, the people on the left side of the spectrum, including a lot of the inner city people who, you know, are going to receive a lot of that aid, if the results actually matter, the aid's going to work and people will be more relaxed about life in general, because they'll see how the system as a whole is now working in their favor. The opportunity is being distributed better, essentially. And so when people are more relaxed across the political spectrum, that's where we can see these kind of issues. They just won't have the energy that they did before. It'll be more about this officer making a bad choice instead of white officer or the police in general being evil or corrupt. So we actually, over time, will be more and more
about what individuals are doing and less about races or governments, police forces, et cetera.
Okay. Jay, what do you think about that?
The end result of prioritized ideally will be, you know, less crime, less disparity, and so these things will just happen less overall, I think. I mean, I think you're always going to have 10% of the population. I think that's what sociologists say, that that's going to be, you know, deviant and be, you know, what we would call criminal. You're always going to have that, but I think it's going to be, you know, with cap prioritized, everything's going to be much less. I think you'll see crime rates go down all around. Violent crime rates.
Yeah, okay. I would like to see that happen, so
well, of
hopefully
course,
you guys
we
are right.
See that well, it makes sense. If in fact, it, you know, I said with the exception of that 10%, that's always going to be deviant, that you're always going to have that in any society. It's just bad wiring. But
I think 10% is a little high.
That's what most sociologists come up with, about 10%.
But sociologists make up 8 of that 10%.
Okay.
Maybe so. I don't know.
He said sociologists, not sociopaths.
I was making a joke.
Just clarify.
I'm saying is that when times get better, they can get a lot better. Let me give you an example.
Okay.
Back when there was jungle law all over the earth, okay, and, you know, meaning whoever had the most power won, okay, you know, then life is pretty bad, okay? But if we have a government strong enough to enforce property rights, and it does so, you know, pretty well, then we stop stealing from each other, we start trading with each other, we have capitalism. Now, capitalism is infinitely better than jungle law, okay? Infinitely better. It's infinitely better. And the same thing is true with, like, dictatorships and democracies. You know, both are examples of people acquiring political power, but if it's properly structured, you get democracy instead of a dictatorship. And living in a democracy, even if it's screwed up, is a million times better, infinitely better than living in a dictatorship. And the same is true with war. If you don't have a strong enough defense for your country, and the enemy just walks in, takes what they want, and stays or leaves or whatever, you know, life under occupation or that kind of threat is horrible. But if you have a strong national defense and you use it wisely, you know, then you have peace, and that's a good thing. It's infinitely better than living under occupation. So I'm going to predict that right now what we have is in government is kind of like the political equivalent of jungle law. Power matters more than results. But if we cap and prioritize government spending so that results start to matter more than power, we're going to see a world that is infinitely better than what we have right now. And what does that even look like? We can't even know because we haven't lived it yet. We have to ask ourselves, what would 200 years of constant improvement in government's ability to pursue social justice, what would that look like? We can't even guess. That's how much better it's going to be over time with cap and prioritize.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we're doing this show.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of hard to grasp as a reality because we haven't seen it yet. Like right now, it just sounds like a lot of philosophy and projection, but you know,
I think it works on a microcosm. I think we see it all over the place in a microcosm. People's households, when they cap and prioritize, everything runs smoothly.
That's true. Yeah.
So that's a microcosm for how this works.
Yeah.
Or a business,
a really
for
good
that matter.
Okay, and yeah. Exactly. You're absolutely right. A well-run business is infinitely better than a poorly managed business. I mean, a poorly managed business will die, and, you know, a living business, even if it's not, you know, perfect, is still infinitely better than a dead business. And actually, you know, the way we're running our country right now, we are risking the death of our society, because if we continue to put ourselves in economic harm because of, you know, bloated government, et cetera, and people investing in other places in the world instead of us, we run the risk of a country like China, who has a lot of wealth now. They're catching up to us, and they and there's a very concentrated amount of power. If the wrong person takes over that authoritarian government, life could be really bad for us. You know, I mean, you know, our, no country in history has lasted forever. You know, so we like to think that we can, but history says no, we won't. So we just have to see what happens. But it would be wise for us to be fiscally responsible, and then within those fiscal limits, be as socially progressive as we can. That's what Cap and Prioritize is all about.
Cool. Okay. So let's take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll have the inside perspective with Jay Amernick. We'll be right back with you on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Before the break, we were talking about capping and prioritizing, which is the solution and the basis of the show. And now we're going to hear from Jay Amernick with his weekly segment. Now, Jay used to work in government in various capacities, so he has what we call the inside perspective, as in how things work from the inside of government. So, Jay, take it away with your inside perspective for this week. Okay, Rick, so what do you think Jay's inside perspective is going to be?
Well, I have no idea. I have no idea. And unfortunately, I usually wait until I hear Jay's inside perspective before I pick the topic for my rant. So I can't even do my rant yet unless you want to give me a seed. Should we do an impromptu rant?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So Heather, here's how it's going to work. You pick the topic or the thing or whatever, and then I'll rant on something related to that thing. So just name something, one thing.
The Statue of Liberty.
The Statue of Liberty. I am tired of all these Republicans and conservatives ranting about France, okay? Because they call France the cheese-eating surrender monkeys, and the truth is that France is just an example of what happens when you don't cap and prioritize government. France is trying to help people. That's the goal of their government. That's their philosophy. It's a socialist based philosophy. Even the conservatives in France are tilting towards the socialist side. But it doesn't do any good to complain about it. What we have to do is learn from their example and then do the right thing here. We have to understand that the desire to help people within our own government and around the world is not going to go away. Okay, that's going to be part of government no matter what, conservatives. And so the only question is, how do we structure it? And I'm going to say that, yes, it has to be capped, but then within that cap, you got to prioritize spending so that the people on the moderate part of the spectrum and the left side of the spectrum can have confidence that the money that's left over after the cap will be used to help people who need help most. That's the only way you're going to get their buy-in on the cap. In other words, the pursuit of social justice is the only way that you're going to make a spending cap politically viable and politically sustainable. So conservatives and libertarians and Republicans, people on the political right, stop complaining about the pursuit of social justice by the government. Stop using France as an example of bad government in this way, and start getting wise to how the world actually works. You need to cap and prioritize, not just cap.
Okay. I'm actually impressed that you just pick up your rant based on what's said and just go from there.
Although I forgot to connect it to actually the Statue of Liberty was given to us by France.
Right. I knew that.
Yeah, you knew that, but some of our listeners, maybe they didn't get the connection.
Okay. It was a little obscure. Yeah, it was a little obscure, but well done nonetheless. I always thought you had the rant prepared.
No, never.
Okay. See, that makes
I've been doing this for 7 years. I have rants on any topic, or I can connect the dots somehow.
Okay.
do we have Jay online yet?
No, we don't. Have
I'm
Jay.
On. I'm on the. Okay. I'm on the phone.
So now
you have me on the phone, don't you?
You're talking. No, what? I'm just thinking that you're talking about social justice making the spending cap viable, and I'm just wondering. I mean, it's easy to say, and we can say, yeah, the right should accept that or have to accept that or someday will accept that. But, you know, people are stubborn. They have their views. They have their beliefs. So how would you actually convince them that, yes, we need some social justice here?
Well, historically, you know, it's happened before, but it just takes time. And usually it happens by accident, almost. It's like, you know, humanity doesn't try to leap to capitalism. They don't even know what capitalism is. But they know that they want more stuff. And they know that the king is getting in the way. And they know that they want to protect their property rights from the aristocracy and the kings and so on. And so, you know, society, through this general pushing over time, ends up in a situation where suddenly it's all working. And then, boom, life is infinitely better than it was before. So it doesn't necessarily happen because we figure it out. Now, you can kind of think of capitalism as something that matured over 10,000 years. Democracy is something that you know, the ancient Greeks had it, India had it, China had it thousands of years ago. So some of these things, and national defense, you know, that's been around since we were little rodents and bacteria and before. So, the idea of defending yourself. So, you know, these ideas are not new, but by doing them better and better and better, suddenly, you know, we get these advantages. And so let's just call capitalism 1.0, you know, whatever the Greeks were doing with money back in the early days. Let's call democracy 1.0 what the Greeks were doing with democracy back in the early days. And same for national defense. And let's call what our founding fathers did, you know, capitalism 2.0, democracy 2.0, and defense 2.0. And then let's call what we're trying to do now, today, think about it as government 3.0, where we're going to keep capitalism and democracy and national defense like they are because they're largely working, but we're going to add into the mix the idea of economizing our public resources, you know, capping and prioritizing your government spending in the pursuit of social justice within the constraints they require for maximum freedom. So when that happens, now we're going to jump to another level of maturity. So how's it going to happen? What's going to happen? I don't know. But I know that it's only going to happen by people like us pushing it and people like our listeners going, huh, I'm confused, but I'll keep on listening because I want to hear more. I want to get this. I want to understand it. Sounds good. I want to understand it. That these kind of conversations are the way it's going to happen. There almost is no other way except by accident.
Yeah. Yeah, the challenge I'm seeing is, you know, people look at things from their own perspective. They don't tend to look at things from how is it going to affect other people? How is it going to affect the other side?
I'll give you some examples of that. Okay. So I gave the whole pitch to this guy who's a really influential guy, well-connected here in the local area. And he told me, you know what you need to do? You need to go overseas and live overseas for 2 years. Okay, in some poor country in Africa, so you can truly understand how the world works, because you're too protected here in the U.S., Rick. You don't know how the world works yet. You need that experience, and then you can come back home, and you can have a broader experience, and then you can tell your story. I told another guy, also local, but he was more focused locally. He liked to work with mayors. And he said, you know what you need to do, Rick? You need to get cap and prioritize working at the local level. That's what you need to do, because then it'll bubble up. and someone else said, you know what you need to do? You need to focus on conservatives, because conservatives are the key to change. And someone else said, you need to focus on progressives. Progressives are about change, and those conservatives don't. So everyone has their own perspective, and they see this through their own lens. And they think, yeah, what we need to do is do X, and X is whatever they care about most. So, yeah, I agree with you. It's going to be a hard fight. Part of it is pulling together where, you know, if you have a bunch of progressives and a bunch of liberals and a bunch of moderates and a bunch of libertarian and moderate rights, and you have a bunch of conservatives and environmentalists, pacifists, if you have them all in the same room, then they can't say, hey, they won't get it, because they're in the room getting it. I think that's part of the key.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so apparently we're having some technical difficulties. We're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, hopefully we'll have everyone back online for the show, and we will have Jay's segment. We'll be right back with you in a few minutes on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Rick Raddatz, and yes, Jay Amernick. We are all here on the call now. So Rick was in the middle. He was on a roll, and we had to cut it off short and go to break early, so I'm going to let Rick continue. What were you saying before we had to take that little break there?
Well, whenever I go on a roll, my mind shuts off and it just flows. So I have no idea what I was just saying.
Maybe Jay heard. Jay, do you have any comment on what Rick was saying? Because you could hear us, but we couldn't hear you.
He was praising France. is what I
he
got.
Was talking about how everyone tells him, no, you have to do this. Everyone gives different solutions from their own perspective. No, you have to go live in Europe. No, you have to do it at the local level. No, you have to talk to progressives. No, you have to talk to conservatives. So.
Right, and look, there's the possibility that they're all right. They sort of have to do everything.
The problem is I am but one person, so we need to get a little bit of a movement going here somehow, so that we can have ambassadors to every group, build, a kind of a penetration within each group, and then we can have all these groups going out. So conservatives for the solution, and progressives for the solution, and Palestinians for the solution. You know, we need all of this around the world, even.
Yeah, right. We just need some T-shirts. So that they can all wear their T-shirts.
Cat lovers for the solution. There you go. I heart the solution.
Just like Chicken Soup for the Soul series, but like how they do everything, like this Chicken Soup for the Soul for everybody, we'll do the same thing.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know what? That's not a bad idea. That is awesome. We need, the solution for conservatives. It has to be a bunch of stories about how conservatives seem to have their aha moment.
Yeah, that's actually a brilliant idea. Yeah, I think we should do that.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we run out of time, let's get to Jay's Inside Perspective segment. You just heard Rick's rant, which we call the Outside Perspective. Now we'll have the Inside Perspective with Jay Amernick. Take it away.
Okay, I'm going to switch. I was going to do one, but I'm going to do the other one now because this one will take less time, and we're running out of time. Okay, and again, it does tie into Captain Prioritize, but it's this. When you see something on Facebook, the bottom line is, if it sounds outrageous, it usually is. So when you see something out there from Front Page Mag on the right, or Salon.com, or The Daily Cause, or Mother Jones, it's a bunch of nonsense. All of it. All that ideological crapola is nonsense. Now, here's how it ties into Cap Prioritize. Once Cap and Prioritize is a reality, it will make us smarter and much more thoughtful as to what we believe. So when somebody puts up an out of context quote of Elizabeth Warren on one side and Michelle Bachmann on the other, you will know that it has been taken out of context and it's just somebody trying to rabble around. And we can get down to brass tacks and really start to take care of society's ills.
Okay, so for example, I saw one that was putting Hillary Clinton against Hitler, I believe.
Yeah. Okay.
So is that the sort of thing you're talking about?
They use two quotes. They use a quote of Hitler's, and then a quote of Hillary Rodham Clinton's, which sounds eerily similar. I would make the suggestion that Hillary Rodham Clinton is not pro Hitler. does not want the type of society that he envisioned, and the quotes were obviously said at two very different times in history.
Yeah, and it was a really generic concept, something like society being more important than the individual, or something to that effect. Like it wasn't
right. The people serve the government. Ultimately, people are there. The collective is there to serve the government. And that was how they sort of twisted the Hillary Rodham Clinton's quote.
Right.
But okay. So that's a fantastic example actually. But there are all kinds of examples all the time on the left. You know, like I said, and to me, Salon.com is probably one of the worst. I mean, the Daily Cause and all that. They're just and Mother Jones. Jesus, I mean, it's just ridiculous. They're very good at taking things out of context. And very good at demonizing the right. Let's just say somebody wants to dismantle the Department of Education, they will say they want to destroy education in this country. No, they have something they would rather replace the incredibly dysfunctional Department of Education with. That's a far cry from wanting to dismantle. But that's what they do. They try to demonize them as being anti this, right? Social Security isn't working, so they demonize the right and say, oh, you want to, you know, push old people off a cliff in their wheelchairs. Of course not. That's ridiculous. Again, if it's
okay, well, I think it equally demonizes both ways, though. For example, Clinton is left, and that was an example of someone on the right making a graphic that demonized her. So
of course, right? Yeah, and we went to that in great detail. There, you know, I mean, yeah, and there was President Obama gets his fair share of demonization.
I'd like to give an example of how cap and prioritize really will achieve what Jay's talking about here.
Okay.
Let's imagine cap and prioritize is implemented now, and so there's a capped budget, and if you want to help people more in some better way, because maybe you have some programs that are working, right? You want to fund those programs more. Well, you got to find something else to defund. And so let's say it comes to the point where the Democrats finally say, you know what, we finally agree we can kill the Department of Education now at the federal level because it'll be done this other way somehow at the states or whatever, and we're going to use that money to do X, Y, and Z, help the homeless in this way or the veterans or whatever. And now we could see Republicans saying, no, wait a minute, Democrats, that's the people's money, and if you finally agree we don't need this program, we should just cut it out and give that money back to the people, okay? And Democrats will say, well, no, wait a minute, Republicans, okay? The ability for us to use that money for something else with a higher purpose is part of the incentives for us to agree to cut the program. If you take away our incentives, then it won't happen. It's kind of like corporate profits, okay? Profits incentivize people to do the right thing in the public market or in the private marketplace. And then the Republicans are going to go, wait a minute, what just happened here? Okay, did we just lose this fight to cut the Department of Education? And did we lose it to Democrats who were defending their argument in terms of the analogy to corporate profits? Okay, that's how upside down the world will become in the future as soon as all the incentives are finally aligned right. The reason capitalism works is that incentives, although not perfect, are largely correct. You can be greedy, but if you are greedy, you want to help people more to make more money, largely. And in government, it's going to get to the point under cap and prioritize where in order to help more people, you want to cut out things that don't work and then fund things that do. And it's that competition that will achieve what Jay is talking about.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense. Jay, what do you think?
I agree.
Yeah.
There we go. We're agreeing more and more.
See, the interesting thing is you brought up Facebook, and I find it interesting that people used to say in mixed company, you don't talk about money, sex, religion, or politics. And yet on Facebook, for some reason, people take like extreme stances on those things. Not even just a nice, hey, you know, this is what I think. What do you guys think? But like bashing people. It's crazy.
Dogmatic. Right. Well, this was one of my inside perspectives a couple weeks ago, I believe, talking about how the best thing to do to your enemy is to dehumanize them, so they don't even look at them as a person anymore. So it's not even so if they say something, it's not even viable.
Wait a minute. I like most things here, I think it's a double-edged sword because, of course, the internet allows people to be more isolated in some ways and kind of have an echo chamber going. But the ability for people now to discuss politics among their close friends and their Facebook friends through Facebook is actually a powerful tool here that's going to eventually help change the system because the reason you don't discuss those things in polite company is because you don't want to embarrass the person next to you while you're eating dinner. It can make for a very awful dinner. But through Facebook, it's such a lightweight communication mechanism that the person who doesn't like it just ignores it, doesn't engage, but they know how you feel. And so you can actually have discussions you couldn't have otherwise. And over time, the truth will out. The truth will win out. And this is actually a good thing.
I just think it gets really brutal sometimes on Facebook. And like people just assume when they put out stuff like that, this person is an idiot. And they just assume that all their Facebook friends agree with them for some reason, even though they probably get a lot of people defriending them. They get heated arguments that don't need to happen. It's how you say it. And I think that how people say it on Facebook sometimes is disrespectful to the extreme.
It goes back to the point of about the ideologue. The ideologue believes what they're saying is the truth, even though it is merely theory and matter of opinion. Right? That's the problem. So when you think that your opinion is actually fact, when it is nothing more than theory and opinion, and someone disagrees with you, again, you have then told them water is not wet, and they go nuts. That's the problem.
Okay, so you're suggesting that the solution is to take things with a grain of salt and do more research, or?
No, people aren't going to do research because they have look at the way the world is now. Everybody likes to customize. Nobody likes the way they came off the rack. Everybody's customizing, whether it be tattoos, piercings, dyeing their hair, all kinds of things. People are customizing, so they've customized what goes into their, you know, iPod that is permanently plugged into their brain. So they're not going to, somebody on the right is not going to go take a look at salon.com and see what the left is talking about. Somebody on the left is not going to look at Front Page Mag and figure out what the right is talking about. Because to them, it's pure nonsense.
Now, I'm going to do a quote here by someone, and I'm not going to say who said this because I don't want to color the quote, at least before I say it. But okay. It's about theory and everyone's goofy ideas of what's right. Here's the quote. As a human being, you have no choice about the fact that you need to have a philosophy. Your only choice is whether to define your philosophy by a conscious, rational, disciplined process of thought and scrupulously logical deliberation, or, this is the fun part, or let your subconscious accumulate a junk heap of unwarranted conclusions, false generalizations, undefined contradictions, undigested slogans, unidentified wishes, doubts, and fears thrown together by chance. I'm going to add radio lyrics, but integrated by your subconscious into a kind of mongrel philosophy and fused into a single solid weight, self-doubt, like a ball and chain in place of where your mind's wings should have grown. Isn't that a cool
that's
quote?
That's cute. Yeah, I like that.
Do you guys know who said it?
No idea. Jay?
No, I have no idea.
Jay?
Ayn Rand. I don't know who.
Oh, okay.
It was Ayn Rand?
Ayn Rand. A lot of people call her Ayn Rand. I believe the correct pronunciation is Ayn Rand. I disagree with her philosophy. I think it's kind of like half philosophy, but I love that quote.
Yeah.
And it's true. You need a philosophy to live by. There's no choice about that. But is it well thought out and disciplined? Are you using logic, or do you just combine a bunch of things that sound good and go forward?
Right. Okay. So I would suggest that ideologues actually do the latter, but claim they have done the former.
Yes.
So again, that's the problem.
And every 400 years or so, someone comes along who actually has done the thinking and has something new. I'm going to say I'm one of those people. But guess what? It looks to everyone else like we're a new kind of ideologue.
This is really tough because I think everybody thinks that they think it through. Even the people that are blatantly just blindly sharing stuff on Facebook, they think that they're thinking it through. This is a really tough sell.
Yeah, well, I would also suggest that the way that this is presented, going back to Heather's point about it's not what you say but how you say it, is that we don't spend a lot of time, you know, calling the President of the United States a Muslim socialist or Governor Rick Perry a neo-fascist dictator. So that's not our tact, is to, you know, to name call and do that. You know, the tact here, I think, is to present the discussion in a cogent manner, an intelligent manner.
Right, which on Facebook very rarely happens.
Of course not. And also you suggest people get defriended, you know. And I love when people put something up and say, if you disagree with me, defriend me. Or if you put a post on here that disagrees with me, defriend me. I'll defriend you. I'm like, really?
It just bothers me when people post something and it's like, right-wing idiots or left-wing morons. And
yeah,
it's like, what, do you realize that out of your 5,000 friends, I realize not everyone has 5,000 friends, but those of us in the internet marketing space do. Out of those 5,000 friends, at least half of them are going to disagree with what you, and they're going to take that personally, that you just called them a moron or an idiot. Like, why would you do that?
Yeah.
That's just, like, that's the moronic part. That's the idiotic part, is actually posting that stuff in the first place, in my opinion.
I have good news.
Okay, what?
The good news is that the ferocity of the right's opinion and the left's opinion in their own beliefs is actually required. It's part of what has to happen in order for us to get so upset that we actually do something different. Okay? If we're all kind of okay about things, nothing's going to change. There's not enough energy there. So we actually need that kind of, you know, unthinking guerrilla energy on the left and the right for something to finally get done. And it's going to be painful and ugly, but that's what big change almost always is. It's a revolution, ultimately.
Okay. Well, that's a great thought to end this show on. And and I think we have a lot to continue next week, but that's a perfect way to sum this up. Everyone listening, check us out at the Political Fix. Sorry, not the. Check us out at politicalfixradio.com. That's politicalfixradio.com. And on behalf of myself, Rick Raddatz, and Jay Amrinick, have a fantastic week, and we'll be back with you next week on The Political Fix. Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amrinick, and myself, Heather Valgoss, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The five economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com.